We stood at the turning point. Interesting statement. I'm either going to turn toward this power and gain access toward this power, or I'm not. And they've given me an instruction about, we beg of you, Mark, to be fearless and thorough from the very start. There's some important pieces in here about really are going to question my faith. And, you know, I've talked to several of you already feeling that anxiety, and that's our just neat word for terror, that I feel every time I go through this. And what I want to tell you is there's some real relief for me, and I know why this sentence is in here. Mark asked his protection care with complete abandon. At this point in time in the work, in page 59, based on what we covered last night and right up through now, you better believe I need his protection care with complete abandon, because I don't know where I'm at and I don't know where I'm going. And I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm feeling that right now because I just started going back through this thing again.
But the only way I can ask for his protection and care with complete abandon is if I've completely abandoned the idea that I can protect or care for myself. Now the next sentence. The next sentence causes more confusion and watering down in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous than probably any sentence we've covered so far, and that is, these are not suggested steps. The steps are not suggested. This is a suggested program.
Some of the history, you know, when Bill did some work on the first manuscript, and he used the word directions a lot. And when he took it back to some of the other members, they said, Bill, you can't give directions to an alcoholic. What, are you crazy? So they made him change that, and he did in a few places, but then many times throughout the book, he throws the word back in under directions. And once again, when it talks about which are suggested as a program recovery, once again, that's an out. Although, here's my experience. You go through these first 59 pages like we have, you don't even see the word suggested. It's not an option. If I haven't gone through this work, the word suggestion really speaks to me. But not if you've gone through it looking at it like the way we've looked at it. Joe?
I'd like to go back to a statement in the first paragraph. Next time you meet someone who says they're recovering, they probably haven't given themselves completely to this simple program. Those that have believe you can recover. Why? Because those who don't recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. So there's several questions there. Do I believe I can recover? We asked that last night. First page, first preface, first foreword, the first printing of the first edition says that we can. And the first promise on the first page of the title page says that we can. So maybe I can recover. But do I believe I can recover if I don't completely give myself to this simple program? Because rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Have I thoroughly followed this path? No. Then I'll probably be somebody that believes you can't recover. So talk to those that believe you can recover and see if they've simply completely given themselves to this simple program. And talk to those that don't believe you can recover, and they probably haven't. They have amends they're aware of. They've done crazy kinds of inventories, autobiographies, life stories. Completely give yourself to this simple program. And I've done these things these weekends where people think we're making it complicated. We're not making it complicated. We're making it extremely hard to get rid of a lot of old ideas, to do something really extremely simple. It feels complicated because it's tearing away so many things that I think are true. That's the complicated part. It is not complicated to start on the title page of this book and go through and answer every question and follow every direction. That's simple. Why couldn't they find an easier, softer way? I'll raise a question with that. Maybe this is the easiest and the softest way that you'll ever recover, and anything else will be a lot of effort and a lot of work and a lot of pain. People refer to therapy. Every therapist I ever had said, this will be a long, tedious, painful process, but you'll be able to feel better, cope with life, and deal with your feelings. I reject all three of those ideas today. I do not want to cope with life. That means to fight the good fight. I do not want to deal with my feelings because I don't have the power to. And another myth, the one I do not like at all, is that we're supposed to learn here in AA how to live life on life's terms. I do not want to live life on life's terms. Life's terms are a mother. Life's terms. Hey, most famous book, biggest selling book of all time. Right up there with the Bible. M. Scott Peck, first line, opens up. Life is hard. Bullshit. We make it hard. I do not want to live life on life's terms. I'd much rather live life on God's terms.
One of the biggest out in Alcoholics Anonymous, people adamantly defend the fact that they're always going to be recovering. I always move them into some questions around amends, and I find they get real, real uncomfortable. See, if I'm always recovering, then I can tell all the rest of you that I'm always going to be making amends. Really? Well, if I created the wreckage in 5, 10, 15 years, and I don't care if I did it in 6 states, then maybe in 5, 10, 15 years, I can go back and clean it all up.
I've had these guys that complain about, oh, I got to go to Des Moines, Iowa and make some amends. I have them call this friend of mine who, when we got to amends, he had lived in, we put his amends cards in piles by continent. North America, South America, England, France, and Asia. Because that's where he had lived and that's where he had caused harm. 3 months ago, he finished his last amends that he's currently aware of. Doesn't mean we won't ever have any more. You keep doing this work, you keep finding more. New inventory, new amends. I got some. Hey, 3 weeks ago I told my best friend, I don't feel like I got a lot of resentments. Did 1, 2, and 3, opened myself up, my consciousness explodes. I got 45 people, institutions, and principals on a list right back in my hotel room at the Hilton that I'm going to write 4 columns on. 3 weeks ago I didn't think I had any. And from those 40 on that list, I'll have some more amends this year. But can I finish the ones I'm consciously aware of? He went to England, France, Asia, North America, and South America to finish amends, and I'll never let anybody bitch at me about having to go to Des Moines, Iowa ever again. Let's look at these notes for Section 6, for those that have been taking the notes. Step 3, we're going to use from page 58 to the bottom of 63. Here's some instructions. Course. Continue to turn every statement the book makes in those pages into a question. We're going to consider the ABCs as a review of the work we've done, which will say, the paragraph above the ABCs, that the description of the alcoholic, from the doctor's opinion, up through maybe the unmanageability on page 52, then the chapter to the agnostic, step 2, and my personal adventures before the first drink, and after the first drink, drunk or sober, make clear 3 pertinent ideas. That I'm an alcoholic and can't manage my own life. That probably no human power can relieve what I suffer from. What would be the catchword there that a drunk looking for a way out would get stuck on? The trap. What's the trap in B? Probably. See? It says probably. She's not a probably. She's a definite. She can relieve my alcoholism. There must be one woman in this room that can relieve what I suffer from, isn't there?
Because she makes me feel good when I'm with her.
Here's an idea we'll get to in the 11th step I'll throw out there now. Is it possible, if you continue to base your spiritual condition on your emotional state, you're headed for trouble? Maybe my spiritual condition, it doesn't mean I should always feel bad, but maybe my spiritual condition is not contingent on my emotional state. And maybe my spiritual condition is not reflective of my emotional state. And maybe I'm not just doing great spiritually because I'm feeling good. Because maybe when you're not feeling good in the middle of amends, in the middle of a fourth column, in the middle of an inventory, and you're not feeling great, you're more spiritually fit than the day before when you were screwing somebody over and it felt really good. When were you more spiritually fit? When you were uncomfortable in an inventory that's God's will, or when you were screwing somebody over yesterday even though it felt really good? A. I'm alcoholic and can't manage my own life. Is that true? B. No human power can relieve what I suffer from, and I don't have any problems anymore. Am I convinced of that? And C. Right from the second step, that God can, I am willing to believe that God can and will, for me, as I am, take me beyond where I am in every area of my life. I am willing, once again, to believe that. Am I convinced? Next question. We keep turning the statements into question. Am I convinced of those three pertinent ideas? Yeah. Now we're at step three. One of the questions we asked last night that you all fooled us and knew the answers to already. Is there a requirement to take the third step? Boy, did that make me mad when I heard that when we got to that in the book, because I'd been to a lot of meetings on the third step in Denver, and nobody ever said there's a requirement in the big book before you take the third step, and it says right here, last paragraph on page 60. The first requirement is that I be convinced that my life, I'm not looking at your life. I don't know if your life run on self-will can be successful. Maybe it can. Maybe it worked for Donald Trump. Maybe it worked for Richard Nixon. I'm looking at, am I convinced that my life, when run on self-will, can be successful or not? Of course I'm going to get to that idea, I'm not convinced. They know when you get to that idea, you're not going to be convinced. You're not going to just meet that requirement with one stupid idea. So what do? They give you about a page and a half that if you're willing to put in the singular, your name in there, or I, or me, in the next few pages, from there, maybe up until the last paragraph on page 62, not including, and you read it in the singular, this is how it'll sound. When running my life on self-will to help convince me that it's not going to be successful. Here's how it sounds on that basis.
First requirement is, Mark, be convinced any life run on self-will can hardly be a success.
My
My life. On that basis, in my life, I'm almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though my motives are good.
There's an interesting idea. Even when my motives are good, when running my life on self-will, it doesn't mean when my motives are good and I'm operating with God. It means even when my motives are good. I mean, haven't you ever had one of those wives or one of those girlfriends that only wanted the best for you, honey? My motive is good. I just want you to be sober. I just want you to be sober, honey, and just run your life into the ground, right? But I don't want to be sober. Oh, but I want you to be sober. But I don't want to be sober, right? Even when my motives are good. Oh, I was just trying to help my friend at work. What I really am up to.
I try to live by self-propulsion. I'm like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in my own way. If my arrangements would only stay put, boy, these you can feel. If only people would do as I wish, the show would be great. Everybody, including myself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, I may sometimes be quite virtuous. I may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. That's when boy meets girl in AA and says, let's go out and talk about God. On the other hand, I'd be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest, but as with most humans, I'm more likely to have varied traits.
They don't ask you your sign, they ask you what step you're on.
Well, what usually happens to me? The show didn't come off very well. I begin to think life doesn't treat me right. I decide to exert myself more.
This is what the four-column inventory is all about. You're not only going to examine when the show didn't suit you. In the fourth column, you're going to examine what you did to exert yourself more.
I become, on the next occasion, meaning whatever I got to do to get my way, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit me.
And that's what I write inventory about, when the play didn't suit me.
Admitting I may be somewhat at fault, I am sure other people are more to blame. Yes.
Column two.
I become angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is my basic trouble? Am I not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind?
Column four.
Am I not a victim of the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if I only manage well?
Column three.
Is it not evident to all the rest of the players these are the things that I want? And do not my actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Am I not, even in my best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony?
They've just brought up three interesting ideas. even when my motives are good, even when trying to be kind, and even in my best moments, when running my life on self-will, I'm a producer of confusion rather than harmony, and it's not successful.
I'm self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. I'm like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation, the minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century, politicians, reformers who sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world will only behave, the outlaw safecracker who thinks society's wronged him, the alcoholic who's lost all is locked up. Whatever my protestations, am I not concerned with myself, my resentments, or my self-pity?
Is there anyone in the room that those three, that everything he's read from the bottom of page 60 to the top of 62, that doesn't describe them when they're running their life on self-will to a T? Sure, it sure describes me.
Yeah. Has nothing to do with how long you've been around this program. Did you notice that when we read that? Selfishness and self-centeredness, that I think is the root of my troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt me, seemingly without provocation. But I invariably find that at some time in the past, I have made decisions based on self, which later placed me in a position to be hurt.
That's what the fourth column in resentment is all about.
So my troubles, I think, are basically of my own making. They arise out of me. And I am an extreme example of self-will one riot, though I usually don't think so.
I'd like to present an idea we'll come back to in inventory when we get to the fourth column, that so far as to where we are right now in this process, the last statement he just read, our troubles are basically of our own making, is the greatest statement of hope in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that we've read so far. And to mark that, to come back to when we get to the fourth column.
Above everything, I must be rid of the selfishness.
Question. Am I convinced of that? We're continuing to turn all these statements into questions for ourselves.
I must, or it kills me.
Do I believe that?
And my name is not in the next sentence. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid.
Do I believe that?
I have moral and philosophical convictions galore.
Have I?
But I can't live up to them even though I would have liked to.
Can I?
Neither could I reduce my self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on my own power. I had to have God's help.
Do I?
This is the how.
So we've looked at continuing to turn statements into questions. We've looked at the ABCs as a review of three pertinent ideas I need to be convinced of that cover the work I've done in the first two steps. We've considered the first requirement. On the bottom of page 60, am I convinced that my life run on self-will can hardly be a success? Now we're going to look at the last paragraph on page 62. We asked a question last night about, do you think the third step decision is doing the prayer, or does the decision come before the prayer? I'll tell you my misconceptions about the third step, and here's how they went. My first misconception about step three was that taking the third step was turning my will and my life over to the care of God. That was smashed when somebody said, no, the third step is not turning your will and your life over to the care of God. It's merely making a decision to. My next misconception was, okay, the third step is making a decision, then doing the prayer is making the decision. They said, no, the decision comes before the prayer, and the prayer is just an affirmation that you've made the decision. So then I said, then where's the decision? Then after that, we looked at the decision, we said the prayer, and I learned to ask the greatest question I could ever learn to ask in AA, which I think answered the biggest dilemma there is in AA nowadays, when you share some terrible problem and some idiot says, just turn it over. Just turn it over. I mean, they say things to new people like we think new people are going to understand what we mean. But they also say things. See, I said the first greatest question I ever learned to ask in AA, the second greatest question I ever learned to ask in AA comes before all this when somebody throws out one of those slogans and you're new. If you're new and you really want to screw things up where you go and people start throwing out these slogans like, just turn it over, go up to them after the meeting and say, what did you mean when you said, you'll find out something real interesting in AA. I'm not going to tell you what you're going to find out. Some of you already know, but you'll find out something real interesting in AA. Some people throw slogans around and have absolutely no idea of what it is they're saying. You say to some guy like me, a mad dog who's lost and has no idea what to do, and I share some terrible problem when I'm new, and you say, just turn it over, I want to take you and I want to strangle you really slow, and I want to say, if I knew how to do that, I wouldn't be here. Right? So the question is, how do you turn it over? Well, before we get to how do you turn it over, which no longer ever has to be a mystery for anybody in this room, how do you turn it over will no longer be a mystery. But before you can do that, you have to make a decision. And the decision is, at the bottom of 62,
it says this is the how and why of it.
That answers a question from the previous page. Remember the question we looked at on 45, where and how are we to find this power? And then 10 pages later, they told us exactly how and exactly where to find this power. Well, they raised a question that we didn't cover yet back on 60, the paragraph after the ABCs that says being convinced. Now we're at step 3, which is that we will decide, mark that word, to turn our will and our life over to God as we understand Him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? They're going to answer in this paragraph he was just reading. They're going to tell you what they mean by deciding this, and they're going to tell you exactly what to do to decide to do this. When they say this is the how, that's how to do it. And why is what they mean. First of all, they're going to tell you why we need to decide to turn our will and our life over. Why?
Says, first of all, I had to quit playing God. It didn't work.
That's why. That's the only reason I need to turn my will, which is what I want, and my life, which is what I do, over to the care of God. Because playing God, first of all, I have to admit that I play God. But we covered that in the requirement to take the third step. Because running your life on self-will is playing God. But we've already seen playing God doesn't work. That's why I need... Do you think any alkie in this room is going to decide to turn their will and their life over to the care of God if they still think their life run on their will can be successful? No. The only reason I'm going to make this decision is that I'm convinced my life run on my will cannot be successful. Why? Because playing God doesn't work. Now, how? How am I going to decide this?
Next, I decided...
There's the third step decision right here.
That hereafter in this drama life, God is going to be my director. He is the principal. I am his agent. He is the father, and I am his child. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which I passed to freedom.
That's the paragraph that has the third step decision. What's the decision? And I think it's just another statement of grace, the absolute grace of God, just like back in the We Agnostics when we got to choose. All we did was look at the nature of our condition and ask ourselves in the first step, and then ask ourselves, are we willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself? And then we were taken to a place where we got to choose God, everything or nothing. Now, all we've really done is reviewed three pertinent ideas and met the first requirement. I'm convinced my life run on self-will cannot be a success, and now I get to decide about God. How does a person like me get taken to a place where he gets to decide what he wants God to be in his life from hereafter? So they give you six terms. Three about God, director, principal, father, and three about me, actor, agent, and child. So I tell people to consider those six terms individually. What would it really mean for me to be an actor who no longer wants to be the director and take direction from a director? Ask yourself. Remember back in the chapter of the agnostic, we didn't read it, but somewhere back in the chapter of the agnostic it says, don't let any prejudice you might have keep you from honestly asking what these other spiritual terms in this book really mean to you. So you get ready to make this decision, honestly ask yourself, what would it mean for me to be the director? For me to be the actor and have a director. What would it really mean for me to be an agent of God? Now, isn't that exciting? And him to be my principal? Principal's not like in school. Principal's like a boss. Like you're an insurance agent and you got a boss there at the office. He's your boss. You're his agent. Serve him. And for him to be my father and me to be his child. My sponsor says, and this one day went from my head to my heart, and sometimes it's there and sometimes it isn't, that if the realization can go from your head to your heart that you are a child of God, you'll never have a problem with self-esteem ever again. Because what could you ever do or accomplish or get or save or collect or accomplish in your life that could ever surpass the self-esteem that would come into your heart with the realization that you're a child of God? So much for the self-esteem problem. You'll never be able to accomplish anything or save enough money or have enough money or enough women or anything that will ever surpass the realization, I am a living child of God. So I consider those six terms individually, me being an actor, agent, and child, God being a director, principal, and father, and then I consider them in connection with each other. What would it really mean for him to be my director and me to be his actor? What would it really mean for him to be my principal and me to be his agent? And what would it really mean for him to be my father and me to be his child? And then I get quiet and I sit and make this decision. Now, before we shut the tape down, I'll ask Mark if up to this, including this decision, there's anything he'd like to add before we go any further.
If you haven't picked up a dictionary, look up those six words. Do that. The word agent is most interesting. It talks about being empowered. And I go to a lot of meetings and I'm around this program, and what I hear is in direct contrast to me embracing the idea that I can be an agent and I can be empowered by the creator of the universe. And I'm going to come to meetings and whine about the external conditions of my life. Look up those six words and start to get some idea of what this book is really presenting with me and what I can gain access to not believe in. What Joe said is so important. If I could ever get from my head to my heart and just embrace that I'm a child of God, all that issue stuff that occupies a lot of time in AA would never be discussed again, would it? We just go into meetings and say, let's talk about how incredible it is to be a child of God today. So that's all I wanted to say.
Before we do something that I'd really like to do, I'd like to make a comment about the top paragraph on 63, why these promises. And, isn't it interesting, we found some promises now that aren't on 83, and then maybe there aren't more than 12. Maybe there are more than 12 promises, because here's some great ones. But my question is, why do the promises here come before the prayer when usually the promises come after the action? Well, maybe these promises don't come true based on doing the prayer. Maybe these promises come true based on making the decision. Because I'll tell you what, the day that I sat quietly and made the third step decision before we got on our knees and did the prayer, he left the room, left me quiet there for a few minutes. Almost every single one of these promises on the top of the page that come before the prayer happened before we ever did the third step prayer. So why doesn't we have Mark read that paragraph of promises that come before the third step prayer after our decision?
When I sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. I had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what I needed. If I kept close to him, which is be his child, and performed his work well, be his agent. Established on such a footing, I became less and less interested in myself, my little plans and designs. More and more, I became interested in seeing what I could contribute to life. As I felt new power flow in, as I enjoyed peace of mind, as I discovered I could face life successfully, as I became conscious of his presence, I began to lose my fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. I was reborn.
Can we stop the tape now? The best food in the world in Louisiana. Let's hear it for that gumbo. Where is the big guy? Where is that big guy? So, we've made an admission. You know what I think is sad sometimes? Someone will take the steps, you know, they'll write them out or whatever, and they'll put principles by each step of what that step means to them. Now, I think those principles are great. Step one, honesty. Step two, belief. Whatever, however you break them down. We've seen a lot of different people break them down a lot of different ways. But I, you know what I think it takes away from? I think it takes away from the step itself as a principle. For example, I think there's an overlooked principle that is in every step. That's overlooked, that has immense power in doing. And that principle is admission. Just think of how powerful the admission in step one was to move you into a place where you're open to looking at God. The power of that admission to move you into step two. The power of the admission in step two that I have some agnosticism, that I have some doubt, honestly admit that, moves me into step three and being open to this decision. Honestly admitting where I am with God and my choice, admitting that. This is what I have decided. There's another overlooked principle we'll come back to in a minute. The admission that takes place in this fourth step when writing. The admission in the first column moves you into the second column. You will see the exact same principle in a four-column resentment inventory as in the first four steps. The first column moves you into a state of consciousness to write the second column. The second column, if not seen clearly, will not move you into a state of consciousness to write the third column, etc., etc. The admission in the third column moves you into the fourth column. Same with fear, same with sex. The admission in step five, to admit in step six what I can do on my own without God with my defects, and admitting that I need this and humbly asking him in seven. Admitting the truth about my harm in eight, and then admitting that to other people in my action in the ninth step. The tenth step is all about moving from resentment, dishonesty, selfishness, self-seeking, and fear out back into the world of the Spirit by honestly admitting where you are when you're working the tenth step. Same with the 11th step. Same with 12. Every single step involves the principle of admission, and we overlook it when we condense these steps into principles for life. I have nothing against honesty and truth and unselfishness and kindness and tolerance and love, and all these principles that come into my life with the power that I'm given from working the steps. But they're not new principles to me. It's just that I get the power to live up to them even though I always wanted to. From doing 1 through 9. I get to practice principles I've always known. But what about the principles of the step written the way it is in the short form itself? For example, the principle of decision. To decide. Tremendous movement comes from simply deciding out of something or deciding into something, as we did in the third step. I think there's some major overlooked principles within the short form of the 12 steps that are extremely powerful. Let's go through these notes so we can get my assistant Vanna White up here and write some inventory. But if she'll do her, no, not yet. Let's go to the left-hand corner and look at section like this, Vanna, like this. Look at section 7 as the four-step resentment. We're going to look at three separate inventories. We're going to write a resentment inventory. We're going to write a fear inventory. We're going to write a sex inventory separately. Resentment, we're going to look at page, what?
64, last paragraph of 67.
Okay. We're going to look from the top of page 64 to where it says now about fear on the bottom of 67 for the instructions and the questions that need to be answered for resentment. We're going to write a first column, which is our list. We're going to do the second column, which is why we're angry. And we're going to do one column at a time. Rather than across, we're going to work the inventory down. We're going to do all of column 1. Then we're going to come back and we're going to do all of column 2 on everyone in column 1. Then we're going to do a third column for everybody that we have a first and second column on. And then we're going to do a fourth column for every third column. That will basically be a four-column resentment inventory with who or what it is I'm mad at, why I'm mad, what areas of self were hurt when I was mad, and then my part through selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, and fear. Then we're going to look at a separate fear inventory from the bottom of 66 to the bottom of 67 up to the word notice to do a two-column fear inventory where the first column is a list that you're going to find by going through your resentment inventory, and also I didn't write it up there, but praying for any fears that weren't in your resentment inventory, and I'll show you how to find that list. And then the second column is simply going to be like, why am I afraid of that? Example. Column 1, I'm afraid of rejection. Why? Because it's painful, I'll be alone, and if I stay alone, I'll be in pain and I'll drink. It's just a simple two-column inventory. Although some of us have taken a little bit further and done with a breakdown of fears, I'll show you how that works. We've taken 10 or 20 fears at a time and done four columns on them, which is interesting to begin to see how fear causes harm in your fourth column, like you saw with resentment. You're right.
Amen.
From the bottom of 67 to the bottom of 68. From the word, notice the word fear, to now about sex. I'm sorry, I had that wrong. Then the sex inventory, we're going to look from the bottom of 68, now about sex, through page 69, to the bottom of page 70. We're going to look at that not in columns. We're going to look at that in paragraph form. The first paragraph, actually what I forgot to put up there was, she could put right there next to instructions, is make list of relationships. You'll be so tired of making lists by the time you're done with the 8 steps, they'll be ridiculous. But once again, I'm going to trust God. Please show me the relationships that need to be examined. I'm going to make that list. And then in paragraph form, I'm going to do one would be... where it says, we reviewed our conduct over the years, I'm going to write a history of that relationship and specific conduct, sex conduct in that relationship, how it ended or where it is now. And then in another, maybe another page or so, I'm going to answer 9 questions from the book in paragraph form. And we'll cover those 9 questions. So, also Vanna has, for anybody who might want them, she will have in the future for only... $49.95. No, she'll have. You can copy from her notes before we leave, or you can maybe get a copy from her if she's willing to do that. Of all the notes for $49.95, of all the sections that we've covered through tomorrow morning. So, those notes will be on the back of this board if you want them later on. But now let's turn and start with. Next we launched on the course.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Mark. Next we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning. which many of us have never attempted.
We're on the top of 64.
Though our decision, my third step decision, was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor. And these are where I get some real specific instructions about, in my case, getting up off my knees after a third step prayer. And it isn't about going home basking in the sunlight of the Spirit for a few hours. It's about immediately picking up a pen and paper and beginning to look at this process. To me, there's a powerful warning in here, and I've seen it happen over and over again about my third step decision will have no permanent effect unless at once followed by that effort to face and to be rid of the things in myself which have been blocking me, blocked from that power I got to gain access to. And then I'm introduced to an interesting concept, first time I've seen this in the book, our liquor is but a symptom. Look up the word symptom. Doctors can't treat symptoms. They can only treat problems. That's a whole new concept at this point in time when I'm going through looking at this. So I got to get down to causes and conditions. So therefore, I start upon a personal inventory. This is step four. Business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke.
Let's stop there for a second.
That top paragraph tells me my third step decision is crucial and vitally important, but if not followed with a course of vigorous action, it will have no permanent effect. So you read that backwards. What if I do follow it through with a course of vigorous action? You know what I can have? A permanent effect. And we're talking like 4 through 9 here, not just 4. There's also an interesting thing here, as we're going to find with each step from now on, it's telling me why I'm doing this. I'm sorry. It's telling me what it is. They say here that it's a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in myself which are blocking me from God, myself, and other people. This is what I'm going to discover in inventory. Now, that's an interesting idea. Contrary from therapy. Therapy, you go into that place to find the stuff you're having trouble with so you can learn to cope, deal, and work on it. This is a whole other avenue, a whole other path. You're going to go into that place where some of us don't want to go, but thank God for the experience that's happened with 1, 2, and 3 that's opened me up to going into that place once again, unalone, not alone. I don't go in there alone. I am not going in there alone. I am safe and protected between prayers here, between the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer. I'm safe and protected. I need to know that when I go into that place that so many of us don't want to go into anymore. I mean, I had, like I said yesterday, I had enough therapy to be dangerous to myself and everybody around me, and I don't want to go into that place if it just means working on it and coping with it. So my sponsor said there's basically two attitudes to go into inventory with. One is if you tell a little kid to go down in his room, clean everything up, he thinks it's a terrible job because all he can do is go down in that room and move stuff around and rearrange it. But what if you told the same kid, some of you have children, what if you told that same child, go down to your room and throw everything out that you don't want anymore for all new stuff? That same job that seemed terrible would seem like a joy. That's the attitude to go into inventory with. I'm not going into that place where that garbage is that's blocking me from the consciousness of the presence of God to work on it, fix it, cope with it, or deal with it. I'm going in that place to face it, honestly admit it, and be rid of. To be rid of. It's a great promise. So now let's start on this personal inventory.
I'm going to mention one thing that Joe's talked about is I do as much or more prayer when I'm writing inventory as any other time. And that's, without that, I can't even imagine the idea going into inventory. And, you know, earlier we were shown we're going to find this great reality deep down within. And, of course, once again, it's reminding me this is going to be an effort to face and be rid of. And, you know, I love this story Joe just told. What is the image the majority of us hear about the fourth step when we're new in this program? Yeah, the picture is the alcoholic egos that go to meetings and talk about, oh, I'm in inventory. There isn't any, I'm in inventory. Because I get to get face and get rid of and get replaced with all new stuff. Inventory is one of the most exciting, dreadful, I can go with both words on either side of the spectrum for me. but it is mostly exciting because I get to go into this thing and face and be rid of the things that have me blocked from this power. I ask you the question, what's the difference between believing in this power and gaining access? If the only thing that's going to allow me to gain access is what's blocking me and I can find that in these inventories, wow, who's not going to get excited about that? Okay?
If all somebody can give me is to go home and do an autobiography and go over what I'm already aware of, or go home and answer 170,000 Hazelman questions, I'm just rehashing stuff I already know. But I would challenge us to sit and be aware that things can be revealed in inventory that you don't know when you go in. I've had stuff numerous times, every time I've ever written inventory, come off the end of the pen that I wasn't even aware of going in, that just comes off the end of the pen. The example I gave last night. I go home thinking I'm mad and I'm in pain because she left me. And by the time I move through that cunning, baffling, and powerful process outlined in our book, I've taken what I think is the truth about why I'm angry and who I'm angry at and put it down in the first two columns. And by the time I get to the fourth column, I've seen that the first two columns are a lie and that she didn't leave me. And my conception of truth is dramatically altered. That does not happen when I do an autobiography or write about how the hell I felt. It happens in a spiritual process that involves power and a change in perception and dramatic changes in awareness.
Taking a commercial inventory is fact-finding, a fact-facing process. It's an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. So we did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. And first, we're going to search out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. And being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Resentment's the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else.
It being what?
It's
going to be important that through the rest of the instructions for all three inventories, that whenever a paragraph uses the word it, you know what it is they're talking about. And isn't it interesting that they actually say here that resentment destroys you and I more than anything else, even alcohol. Even alcohol. And that from resentment stem all forms of spiritual disease, that we're not only bodily and mentally ill, which we covered in the first half of step one, we are spiritually sick. That was the second half of step one. Here's where they finally tell us about a threefold disease. We're not only bodily and mentally ill, we have become spiritually sick.
You know, from resentment stem all forms of spiritual disease. For I've been not only mentally and physically ill, what we've looked at so far, we have been spiritually sick. And I love the next sentence. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. What's the other side of that? If the spiritual malady is not overcome, I straighten out mentally and physically.
I don't straighten out mentally and physically.
Exactly.
And if I don't straighten out mentally, the obsession to drink returns. The insanity of the drink returns. I pick up a drink, and there I am back into the disease. If the spiritual malady is not overcome. I'd like to go back to another statement. The last sentence on the top paragraph where it says, so now we're going to get down to causes and conditions. Don't confuse looking at inventory to find the cause and the condition of your alcoholism as finding the cause of it in the second column because they call it the cause, and the condition in the third column because that's where it left you. We're going to find the cause of your alcoholism in the fourth column and the condition in the third column. When they use the word the cause over on page 65 in Bill's example, that means what you think currently was the cause of your anger. But you'll find out that isn't even true either. So the second column is neither the cause of my alcoholism that we're supposed to get down to, nor the cause of the resentment in the first place, but it's got to trick you first before you can see that.
In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. So now we're going to get instructions on the first column. We listed people, institutions, or principals with whom we were angry, period.
Let's get one from somebody. Excuse me. I asked if anybody that wanted to be involved in this inventory process to make a list, two people, two institutions, and two principals. Who's got a person? I should have said, who doesn't? Can you give us just... Oh, great. Number one. My sponsor. Now let's take that across three columns and then we'll come back and we'll do another one. What does it say how to do the second column?
We ask ourselves why we were angry.
What were, can you give us the second column that you don't have yet or have there? He didn't, what, lead me through this? Yes, we're doing an example, but you just brought up a good point. What I'd want to do now after doing the third step is I want to go home and I want to make my list and work on it until I know it's done. People, institutions, and principals with whom I was angry, ever. What'd you put? He didn't
go through the big book. He said word for word, word for word.
That's good enough. That gets it? Okay. So let me say that again. Before you start any of this second column work, you go home and you work on your list until you feel like it's done. And I kept asking Don, how will I know when it's done? It's also a good time to carry a pocket notebook. And if you're in the car at work or at a meeting and a name or an institution or a principal comes to you, put it in your notebook and then take it home and put it on your list. Also, give yourself the luxury that any time during the rest of the inventory till the day you fifth step, a current or past or present resentment comes to you, just take it across to wherever you are. If you're in the second column, just put it down on your list and do it when you get to it. If you're in the third column, do it all the way across to the third column. If you're in the fourth column, take that resentment that's revealed to you all the way across. What I'm saying is, keep the inventory current from the time you, Bobby and I have had a lot of talks about this, from the time you start inventory till the time you finish inventory so it's current. And he seems to think, and I seem to think, that it's important that not a long time is spent messing around with inventory, month after month after month. Go with what's revealed, get the inventory done, and know that more will be revealed the next inventory. I've had different feelings about that. I believe it's time the sponsor and the person doing it trust God. And some need to get more out and some don't. Time limits, I don't know. But if you're in a workshop that's decided a certain length of time with inventory, you kind of got to submit to that. So we've gone home and we've worked on just the list. Now it says to ask why, and we found one, so we're going to letter that A. Now let's say he's got three more. Think of that as one piece of legal page, paper. Let's say he's got another one, B. The sponsor stole $500 from him. That would be another page. We're going to do one resentment per piece of paper. So if he's got three more resentments for his sponsor, it'll look like this. A, B, C, D. Four resentments, four pages. So you use a bunch of paper. You just got more room to work with. You'll see why here in a minute. Now we're going to look at seven. You want to read in most?
Yeah. And I can't stress enough to what Joe says when I do inventory. I write down. I do not write across. I pray and I always come down. I finish all of column one. I always tell people, don't judge your work. Typical alcoholic thing. I don't know if I got everybody on here. You don't. Pray. Does it feel like you're done? Yeah. Well, let's go on. Okay. But I always write down. And then I go to the second column and I write down. So it goes on to say.
So we didn't say again. Now you've gone home and you've done the second column on every first column. And your second column is totally done.
It says in most cases, it was found out that our self-esteem.
Let's write that up there.
No. Over closer to the line and just put S-E.
So we've got our self-esteem, our pocketbooks.
Wait a minute. Oh, right. Pocketbook.
Our ambition.
A-M-B.
Our personal relationships, including sex.
Sex relations.
Were hurt or threatened. So we were sore, we were burned up.
Now this next paragraph's a little confusing because they repeat themselves and then throw in one they haven't mentioned yet.
On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem?
We got that.
Our security.
There's a new one.
Our ambitions.
We got that.
Our personal or sex relations.
We got those.
Which had been interfered with. Of course, so, and they left out money on that one.
Now, if you look all the way down at the bottom of the example with his wife, he uses a new one we haven't listed yet, and that's pride. So we found seven areas of self which can be hurt, threatened, or interfered with when so-and-so did such-and-such. Use those guide words that are in the top two paragraphs on 65. We found those two paragraphs. So how do I read it to myself now? When I resent my sponsor for not taking me through the first 164 pages the way I thought he should, did that hurt, threaten, or interfere with my self-esteem? Now I'll give you a definition for each of these. Don't read the word and try to figure it out. Read the definition and ask yourself, when I resented my sponsor for not doing that, did it hurt, threaten, or interfere with how I saw or felt about me? Sure it did. So I put self-esteem, which is how I see or feel about me. For a minute, but then we're going to have to erase it. Yeah. Self-esteem. Well, we talked about any length. Huh? Yeah, then the alcoholic says, I'm doing it. Aren't I doing it? I'm doing it. Next you'll say she's doing this to the best of her ability. Security is real simple. It's what I need. So once again, I say to myself, when I resented my sponsor for not sharing the 164 pages with me, did it hurt, threaten, or interfere with what I needed? Sure. See, we won't always find all seven with every resentment. How about pocketbook? Do you think when his sponsor didn't share that with him, it interfered with his pocketbook, his money? You'd have to kind of stretch your imagination to say that not working the steps impaired in his income. But let's say for argument's sake, we didn't find that one. Just leave it. But put next to pocketbook is my money. I think it did, but... ambition is what I want. It's different than the things I need. Ambition is different than security. Just like self-esteem is different from pride. Did it affect our personal relationship and other personal relationships not going through the first 164 pages? Absolutely. So put friendships. That can be with the person in the first column or others around your life. Notice we get to inventory. The lawyer's not taking such great notes. What's the next one? Your sponsor not sharing the 164 pages probably did or did not interfere with your sex life. For argument's sake, we'll say no. But it's my sex relations, obviously. Now, I'm not having sex with my sponsor, but not doing what's in the first 164 pages might affect the home life a little bit. Now, pride is what others think or see or what others feel or think about me, rather than what I think or feel about myself, which is self-esteem. You ever had all your buddies patting you on the back, telling you you did a great job in the game, and at the same time felt empty inside like a rotten piece of you-know-what? That's the difference between pride and self-esteem. Pride comes from outside of us, from others. Sadly enough, doesn't have to. In an unhealthy way, let me say. In an unhealthy life, pride comes from others, self-esteem comes from within. On the spiritual life, it doesn't come, either one doesn't come from either. Right?
Yeah.
Now, before we talk about the third column just a little bit more, let's go on. I did want to make one comment, though, that took me a long time to notice, and I don't know why. Bill Wilson gives us two choices on how to do the second column. I never saw it. Notice with Mr. Brown, he does three resentments. Pays attention to my wife, told my wife about my mistress, and might get my job at the office, and does a third column on each, and marks whether fear's involved or not. That gets a little redundant, but it's helpful the first time. You mark fear, and what you'll find is any time one of those seven areas is hurt, threatened, or interfered with, there's always fear. But then in the next one, he does about three or four resentments in one paragraph. She's a nut. She snubbed me. She committed her husband for drinking. He's my friend. She's a gossip. He does about five resentments in one paragraph and only one third column. So the way I've chosen personally for me up till today is the first method. One third column for every second column, and doing the second column individually, not lumped in a big paragraph. And the other three, he does them that way too. I like the first method. I like the method he uses with Mr. Brown. Separate second columns with a third column for each one.